our man of Booth Booth Band. Now, I don't know if you guys know, but I hosted the show solo last week. And it went great. Better than it's ever gone before.
Can anyone corroborate that?
No, sorry,
the deal has been closed on that. You have no jury to back your claim.
All right. Well, you guys had like 2 weeks then to come up with an opening bit, right?
Yeah.
Something to talk about, something funny to do at the top of the show. What'd you guys got?
Justin once again had major surgery on his head. And he's got a band-aid on the side, pulling a little Pulp Fiction so the soul
can do a little
I got a couple laughs in my bed. 2 weeks, baby!
I got a tattoo of Ant-Man. No. Just surgery is the only good bit.
Oh, okay. Well, you actually had a bit taken off.
Yeah, just...
The soft shoe. You bust out the soft shoe.
Right from the headlines.
If you guys ever want to leave again, you just let me know.
Cool.
Guys, we have a very exciting show for you. I'm very excited about it. Yes, we have, so let's... Welcome out, ladies and gentlemen, Calvin Reed, Josh Frankel, and Jeff Newell!
Hello.
Hey, guys. All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. We're very excited to have you here. Arrange your stuff. Take your time. Whatever you need to do.
Pete and I built this bench last week for us to sit on.
Yeah, you guys are definitely going to be smooching by the end of the show, right?
Yeah.
It is a love seat.
Like a Charleston bench in front of a big manor house.
If you need any...
What? I'm courting, Pete.
That's pretty racist.
No, it's not.
What? What's
a
racist?
Charleston is not a racially charged bench.
I'll be the judge of that.
Yeah.
Sponsored by Bartles and James.
Just raise your hand when Pete says something racist. Right?
Yeah, you're going to have your hand raised the whole show. Cool. Well, thank you. Let's talk with you first, Charles. So you are the editor of PW...
I'm the senior news editor of Publishers Weekly, but I'm the co-editor, along with the fabulous Heidi McDonald of the Beat, of PW Comics World, formerly PW Comics Weekly. Changed it. It was a weekly newsletter. It's going to become a monthly newsletter, but that doesn't mean we're cutting back our coverage. We're putting more stuff up on the web, we're putting more in the magazine, and we'll tweet and toot and all the rest to make sure people know. But we write about comics and graphic novels in the book publishing world. I was lucky enough to bug the hell out of my editors a few years ago. I won't say when. Back when the book industry didn't pay any attention to comics at all, but now they do. We're a part of that. We kind of pioneered it in some ways, and so we'll be changing our frequency, but not the amount of stuff we do. And we love comics. At PW.
I called you Charles, didn't I?
You did. But,
all right. Hi, Calvin.
I was about to raise my hand and say it was racist, but I said I'll give him another chance.
If they said Charles did, I said Charles. It got
it's confused. Okay. We'll let it pass.
All right. Cool. Well, welcome to the show. So from your perspective, how you have, a very different perspective coming at comics than we do, which is we like superheroes, you guys. So how, from your perspective, have comics changed over the past couple of years?
Well, I mean, superheroes, superheroes may be the crazy comics guy of the day, but one of the things that has been tremendous about the last, say, 10 years is that, the genres have exploded across the whole reading world. You can find comics in Barnes & Nobles now. People across all reading tastes, now there's something for them to read. So, if you're a superhero fan, terrific. We write about superhero comics as well, but if you want mystery, crime, literary stuff, serious nonfiction, Joe Sacco, we've got interviews with him, any of this stuff, it's available, it's published by major publishers, it's published by conventional comics publishers, and it's in bookstores. The world of comics has really broadened itself.
Right, and how has there been any change in how the book world views graphic novels and comics?
Absolutely. What we, you know, we write about the, in particular, the New York trade book publishing houses, and that, by that I mean, you know, Random House, HarperCollins, the Big Six, Macmillan, I'm forgetting some of the other ones.
That's the only ones.
Over the last 10 years, and I will say there's a little, you know, advertisement for ourselves. We had a big part, I think, to do with it, to pushing them in this direction. The big trade book publishing houses all have either they've got imprints dedicated to comics, or they've got editors there who publish comics very seriously. They're out looking for them. It's always a part of their list. It's something that's important to what they do.
Great. All right. Well, Jack, let's turn to you.
That's Josh.
Oh, all right. Okay.
Racist. All
right.
Anti-Semitic.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know. I have a lot of stuff. I have a lot of stuff going on, guys. So let's just move past it. Josh.
Hi, I'm Josh. I'm an alcoholic. Wait, that's not the wrong thing.
No, we do that too.
Talk about the book.
Okay.
You're working
on. I'm a publisher / writer. I'm publishing the new Harvey Pekar book called Harvey Pekar's Cleveland. I know we're all superhero geeks here, but I hope you've heard of American Splendor, at least in passing.
Oh, yes.
Good.
Yeah.
Because they made a great movie about it. In fact, I have a few pages here, which... Take a look if you'd like to see the splendor.
Just me?
Just
you guys. Great.
Yeah, don't take it home. It cost me $30 to get those laminated. And it took an hour.
This folder's from when you were from your trapper keeper.
It was the trapper keeper used to cover...
That folder's going
to cover a
lot of things.
Boner cover. Wiener.
Yeah, and we also have Cleveland cards if anybody wants them, completely free.
Well, talk about this. I mean, obviously, this is a posthumous book.
You guys read it really quickly.
It's like an eye exam.
Was this a book that Harvey Pekar worked on, or is it more of a...
It's completely written by Harvey Pekar. Okay. It's one of his last graphic novels before he unfortunately passed untimely. We signed him to actually do the book the March before he died, so literally March, like 4 months before he passed, so it's... Probably the last book he signed on to do.
I think 20 pages were drawn.
And yeah, 20 pages were drawn when he was alive, and he loved them. I mean, and in fact, everyone who's seen the pages seems to love them, so I hope that's a good sign of how the book is.
Yeah. They're great pages.
Yeah.
Really.
And what's the focus of the book?
Cleveland. It's about, well, I mean, Harvey lived in Cleveland his whole life, you know. I don't know why, but... and it was his native town.
It's the book.
Well, yeah, exactly. But I still can't quite figure out why. But he lived in Cleveland his whole life. It's kind of his like hometown. It centered him. And it's just about the rise and fall of Cleveland. And the first 30 pages are pure Cleveland history. And then once you get past that, it goes into American Splendor, where it tells stories of Harvey's life and interesting characters he encountered as they relate to Cleveland.
Cool.
And does the Drew Carey show play a lot into this?
No, I think actually Pekar hated Drew Carey.
That's what I
really
guessed. Yep.
Yeah.
I seem to remember in the opening from the Drew Carey show, he's in the corner the entire time being like,
scowling.
While they're dancing.
I don't know if he hates him, but like, it doesn't seem like something that Harvey would like, but I could be wrong. Who knows?
What is it like for you to be working on essentially his last book?
It's surreal because when we signed him on to do it, it was two things. First off, I'm only 23. I've been an American Splendor fan since I was 13 years old. So it's kind of like going from being like, you know, a big fan of his work to being an active participant and putting it out there. Mm-hmm. And the weird thing is, I thought we'd do more books with him because we thought we'd do pretty well and we have a continuing relationship. So it's a responsibility to be putting out one of his last books and to make sure it comes out well.
Great. Well, cool. Looking forward to it. Jeff, let's turn it over to you. You're constantly working on a million things. What's going on?
Let's see. Well, comics-wise, I am working on... I'm also working with Josh. Josh is publishing, and I'm editing the Harvey Pekar's Cleveland.
Doing a great job.
Editing essentially means, it was totally written before he died, and Harvey Pekar doesn't need a heavy editor. It's just when the artist delivers the art, there are little typos, there are little things. He might have... editing a comic book or something, he might have used the word distinct twice in one page and have to find a synonym, you know, so it's like soft editing. And in addition
like
to my... Like
different.
Exactly, different.
That's
Schmengi.
Schmengi.
I like using the word.
Another popular term.
Yes, as a synonym.
Another popular synonym for distinct.
Yes.
Schmengi.
Cinnamon.
A popular cinnamon for everybody.
And then in addition to my comics work, I've been doing a lot of... social media consulting lately.
Tell us what that means.
That's great. I fell asleep a little bit when you said that.
Yeah. I've been doing it. Was it?
Yeah, you was for your social media.
You were the sixth woman to get the pictures.
Yes, yes. I was the one who like said, you know, if you want a career besides politics, do this right now.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, if you really like, if
real
that's
quick,
your goal,
real quick, what career were you pushing him for?
Yeah, sure. But if like you really want to do anything but politics, tweet your wiener.
Yeah. Tweet your wiener. That's your website, I believe. Yeah. Tweetyourwiener.com.
But so I basically what I do is because I left. I used to be in the corporate world. I was doing 9 to 5, 9 to 9 work for Samsung. I don't know if you guys knew that. Like, you know, back in 2004, 2005, 2006, 2007, 2008, I had a tucked in button down shirt and khakis.
When you say tucked in, you're talking about your wiener?
Yeah, it was tight back then. It was the whole thing.
It was a different time.
Yeah.
Were you doing the Buffalo Bill thing?
The Buffalo Bill thing.
I'm with you. We're talking about Silence of the Lambs. We're not talking about the football team.
So what I do is I help.
We have some photos.
I'm working with two liquor brands now, actually, Kraken Rum and Hanger One Vodka, which is fun. You know,
Hanger
so I help
one.
Them.
Hanger One.
Hanger One's a great vodka and Kraken.
Kraken One and Hanger One.
No, Kraken Rum. Kraken Rum. Kraken Rum and Hanger One.
It sounds like you haven't gotten too far from when you were tucking your reader in at Samsung.
Yeah, so it's like, that's because I'm drinking too much of the Hanger One. When you have the samples, it takes you back.
California Boutique Vodka.
Yes, exactly. Alameda.
I'm with you.
But they actually have a blimp.
That's water.
They actually
I'm drinking right now.
They have a blimp going around the country right now. So, you know, I craft various clever, pithy tweets, you know, related to the blimp tour. It's a good topic to riff on. A
clever blimp tweet?
Really? What's an example of a clever blimp tweet?
Let's say there's a photo of the bottom of the dirigible and you make some joke about, you know, the belly of the beast, or, you know, some kind of, you know, things like that, you know, like little...
Interesting.
You know, kind of, that's what I did today, that's why it's fresh. I just did...
The belly of the beast?
The belly of the beast.
Nice.
But, cool. Well, where can we follow your blimp tweets?
You can follow them when I retweet them at twitter.com/jawfurry, JAHFURRY.
Nice. All right, cool. Guys, I think we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call the stat. We're a little slower. We like to call it the stack. What we do for the stack is each one of us has made a pick, some comic that stood out to us this week, and then we go to bat for that comic. There's a bat. There you go. First thing we're going to talk about, this is actually my pick, was Fear Itself, number 3 from Marvel Comics. I'll pass this over to you guys, but you got to be careful because it's Pete's and he doesn't like comics. Crumpled. Here's my thing about Fear Itself. I'm usually very conflicted about event comics, and in general, I've actually been even kind of conflicted about this title. It feels like it's moving very quickly, not a lot of characterization necessarily going on. What I liked about this issue in particular is Stuart Immonen's art feels huge. What's going on, even more than the content in Matt Fraction's words, it's a nonstop battle scene, pretty much the entire thing. It feels thumping. It feels like an action movie trailer where you're really only getting the highlights of what's going on, but it feels gigantic across the board. And that's the thing in particular that stood out to me that I liked about this. I'll also mention, not to slag off a book at the same time as I'm complimenting one, this book and Flashpoint number 2 ended in very similar ways with very similar panels, which I won't necessarily mention, but the end of Flashpoint kind of made me laugh out loud, which really was a...
Really?
Yeah, well, I feel like it was so surprising and ridiculous in a way. As opposed to this one, actually, what happened at the end here carried a certain amount of emotional weight. So in contrast to each other in particular, I like this quite a bit. What did you guys think?
I feel like all of the issues of Fear Itself are playing like trailers, like successive movie trailers for this movie of Fear Itself, which we haven't quite got to yet. Like, all the hammers have fallen and people are slowly...
Well, people are still getting hammers.
People are getting hammers.
Yeah.
Like, you never
you
know
get
when
a hammer,
hammer,
thing gets a
it's
hammer.
It's like the end of Oprah.
Yeah.
The Oprah Winfrey Show. You get a hammer. You get a hammer. Everyone gets a hammer if you look under your chair. But, and like you're saying, the end of this I thought was very, very nice. Has everyone read Flashpoint number 2?
Yeah.
No, you're not going to read it? Okay, so we can talk about it. And I didn't think it was funny. Barry Allen is in this alternate sort of Elseworld DC universe, and he's like, I don't have my power, so...
That's
and
what, you know.
Thomas Wayne, Batman's dad, is Batman in this universe, and they fight for, like, mentally, like, vocally argue the whole issue, which is sort of a waste of time. Yeah, boring. And then he's like, you know what? Turn me back in the Flash, put these chemicals on the edge of this chair, and electrocute me. And he sits in the chair, and it happens, and then the last panel is just him being horribly burned. And I was like, I didn't laugh, I was like, that's so fucked up. It's like a little kid being like, I'm gonna be like the Flash. No, I'm not! I'm gonna be all the weeks. I was so bummed out by that.
I can't believe you laughed at that.
Yeah. It was dark. It was so dark.
That's exactly the reason that you explained, where it's like, hey, this is a world where, like, oops, sorry, superhero things don't work. Sorry, you're gonna burn to death.
Yeah, no.
I'm not selling my book.
Yeah, no.
And it's also amusing.
Yeah.
But in this issue, like, I really like. I feel like the thing picking up the hammer on Yancey Street, I thought was it's gonna be a big like pop point. So I think that's an interesting choice.
Yeah. Pete, what do you think about this?
Well, we're dancing around what happened at the end there. We spoiled Flashpoint. No, but can we spoil
real quick,
spoiler fest, what
you finger. I don't know if you've really called attention to it.
My mini Wolverine on a finger? Yeah. Just happy because I went to the grocery store and they had them. And I was like, oh man, I hope I get Wolverine. I did!
Yeah.
I spent 4 days in Vegas. Couldn't win a thing, but I got a Wolverine.
That's so cool. So when you go to the grocery store, your mommy lets you do that?
No, I have to sneak away when she's not looking.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's so nice.
Because I'm supposed to be getting vegetables.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about the end?
What grocery store do you want to talk about?
Is it the meth food?
Yeah. It's
all right.
Go get them, guys.
Yeah. You want to talk about the end of Fear Itself?
Yeah, so the end of Fear Itself, I was very upset because I was like, what the fuck? We just put him in Captain America's spot. Now we're gonna kill him off. Like that was
him. Bucky. That was the Telltale Bucky.
Talking about Bucky, that Bucky impression. Mm. Yeah, it is sort of a surprising choice, but I like the way it was played out.
Yeah, I agree with you for the greater universe ramifications, but I think it played out nicely in the issue.
Did you guys read this at all?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Thoughts?
I like. Again, Fear Itself seems like a trailer, and that's cool, but I wish there was a little more story in the first two issues.
Yes.
Or three now, actually. And the first issue I thought had a good amount of story, but these two are kind of just like action after action. And it's still good, but it's nothing I really like falling head over heels for. And I actually don't like the fact that they're kind of, I don't know if they're killing them off or if they're, you know, leaving them crippled or something. Because when they brought back Bucky, Brubaker actually did a really good job bringing him back.
Yeah,
and it's
great.
Really hard to bring back a superhero decently. Like, remember how they brought Jason Todd back or how they brought any of those other superheroes back? It was a clusterfuck.
Mm-hmm.
But when they brought Bucky back, they actually did a damn good job of it, which is very rare. I think it's kind of weird to undo all that.
And the Captain America book, which just also came out this week, is great right now.
Oh, great, yeah.
It's really
it's
good.
Been so
yeah.
for a while.
Yeah.
Well, see what happens.
I haven't read it yet, but I'm excited because... I love Fraction, I love Casanova, and Immonen, I think, like you said about the art being big, the thing about him is what he does is he combines, like, that Kirby bigness with that new, like, cinema quality of, like, a Brian Hitch. He's in between. He's in between that arty,
that's
indie,
really...
big Kirby thing, and like he did with Warren Ellis' Next Wave, which I love.
Yeah.
Next Wave is brilliant.
That's great.
So I'm psyched for that.
So really but I have to admit, the pages that I saw there are eye-popping.
Yeah.
So...
it's great superhero art. Moving on, let's talk about Uncanny X-Force number 11, which I assume was your pick.
That's my pick, yes.
Defend yourself.
It's a crazy book. You're correct, audience member. It's a crazy book. The X-Force team going to... on the nod of the Dark Beast, the Beast's evil sort of dimensional... Okay, the Dark Beast exists in Age of Apocalypse.
Right.
They cross back over the regular Marvel universe.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Stuck through the portal and stuck around.
Yeah,
he's been sort of an on-again-off-again villain for the X-Men. Here in X-Force, they're dealing with Angels, who was turned by Apocalypse into Archangel, the dark version of Angel, and now he has both powers. He's the one guy before
that.
But because Apocalypse was recently killed in his boyhood form by the Team X-Force here... he has now become the inheritor of the Apocalypse power, and because he's turning evil, so they have to venture to the Age of Apocalypse, which is the parallel dimension.
That was, by the way, that was day turning into night.
But no, honestly, so they go to Age of Apocalypse, and it's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I'll say I actually love this issue as well. Yeah. This series is great. Yes. It is so, as you've seen, insanely steeped in continuity. I have no idea how it reads to anybody else, but for somebody who is very, very familiar with this continuity, it's kick-ass.
Yes.
Very dark, very intense, very character-driven, has excellently written distinct characters, which I think is very unique.
Yeah. That especially on a team where it's like, oh, they're all hard-edged.
Yeah.
Remender's found a way to make them all different.
Yeah.
In a really good way.
Cool. Have any of you been reading Uncanny X-Men?
I read it when it started. And when did Rick Remender start writing it? Because that
he's been on this whole series.
Yeah, he's been on this.
I read the old X-Men before he was on it. I mean, I love his writing, but yeah. I read this.
Well, that may, do you think that might be a function of not traditional superhero writers coming in and writing in a way that will sort of like make sure they get themselves into it?
Definitely.
I mean, I think so.
And he's a great example because especially the last arc, which was dealing with Weapon 13's like crazy world, like it was nuts. It was like an episode, like an issue of Fear Agent in the Marvel Universe. Like it was all over the place. And this is sort of has that feel of just like very different. Anything can happen and it's really fun.
Yeah, this issue really won me over because anytime you have a character who's bad but will be good just to help you guys out, you know, I'm like, ah, here we go. You know, what trap are we going to just march right into?
Yeah.
But the writing is so good that really won me over, and the action, the crazy adventure. And yeah, it's one of those things of like, holy shit, there's Sabretooth. He's supposed to be dead, but you know, in this universe he's alive, and it's just crazy.
Yeah, it's like seeing old friends.
It is.
Great.
It is.
All right, let's move on with Pete's pick, which was Batman Knight of Vengeance number 1, part of the Flashpoint crossover miniseries. Pete, what'd you think about this issue?
Well, this is great. This has got the Dream Team from 100 Bullets on it. It's great to see them back.
As a relevant reset.
Yeah, back together again. They complement each other so well. And what I really liked about this... Azrael's writing is just fantastic. First page, you see a curmudgeon-y John Wayne.
Thomas Wayne.
Thomas Wayne. Yeah, John Wayne. Thomas Wayne having to sit through therapy, and it was hysterical. And then ending also really well. It was like one of the fun things about this new kind of Batman scenario is I'm going to kill people. I'm mean, and I'm not going to do what Batman does.
Oh.
So it's like, hey, Croc's going to jump me, I'm going to fuck your shit up. So it's fun to have kind of an Elseworlds and actually take advantage of the Elseworlds.
It's a great translation of the action of this comic.
Yeah.
To sort of...
Yeah, Batman's all like,
I'm
going to
fuck
your shit up.
I'm gonna put a batarang in your head.
I don't think I.
What did you think about this?
I like it a lot as well. Like it's nice. Of all the Flashpoint miniseries, remember this one? Like seems to have a real point of view and is fun. When the other ones, did you guys read these at all? No. Oh, no one. No one at all is interested in these. The Green Lantern one seemed like it was sort of a mess. The Secret 7 one was crazy. Like, I'd so to the point where I'm like, I'm very surprised that they're using these as their, like, flagship moves right now. I like the Secret 7, but it was just a very odd read.
Yeah.
This one seems much more like, I get this. This is a take on Batman in an Elseworld situation that still maintains some of the character of the original and moves into a different place.
Yeah. And this Joker looks amazing.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Joker is the Heath Ledger Joker at the end.
Nah, I don't know about that.
You don't know that.
Straight up.
No, take not straight up.
Straight up?
Not tell me. No way.
Well, it's interesting.
Do you really want to love me forever?
As a rebel, I love him. And certainly the Joker that he did, the Joker standalone graphic novel, was awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really incredible. And was, weirdly, Heath Ledger. Like, even though he did it really months before, or almost a year before, it actually was released. So, but to jump back to the X-Men in a world, wanted to say, I hadn't read it, but I'm kind of old, and I actually
slow down.
Are you being racist? I might be. Yes,
ageist.
Racist.
Because I'm in a rage all the time about so many things.
Oh, rageous.
But since I read the X-Men when they first came out, it's fascinating to me
Impossible.
To see this game. No, it's not.
No, everyone, that was centuries ago. Those people are all dead.
But it's fascinating to see this refocusing now on the origin of the X-Men. It's really amazing to get to see it kind of recycled back now and also reinterpreted. So it's great. But yeah, Ezra, I have to admit, I love his stuff. So
yeah.
I haven't read that.
It's fun stuff. Particularly if you like Dark Knight Returns, this looks and feels exactly like it.
I think the best part of this whole book wasn't even Azzarello's writing, it was the art in it, Rizzo, because just by like the way he drew it, you can tell it's completely different Gotham. Like Jim Gordon looks defeated and haggard, you know.
Yeah, the last third, the action of the last third book.
Yeah,
part of the book.
I mean, it's just, I think that's what sells the book. I mean, I love Azzarello's writing, but I think Rizzo's art just really sells it.
The hell of a team.
Yeah. All right, and that's it for the stack. Guys, we are going to move on. We're going to move on with my favorite section because you guys make it up. It's your audience questions. And for that, we're going to bring out Boothman.
Boothman's got a stand.
Boothman lives in the booth, by the way.
What turns to that rub?
Stand. You sit all day long. All
right, so first couple people are going to get some free comics. After that, we're going to do a lightning round, so let's get into it.
I didn't miss you. I didn't miss him either.
We were together. We were barely spending.
Took a week. How do you think Harvey P. Card influenced mainstream American comics?
Well, turn that over to you guys.
I can think of a pretty good example. Any of you ever read Ed Brubaker's Incognito?
Yes.
Well, if you recall, in the beginning of Incognito, the guy's a file clerk, and Ed Brubaker's like, well, yeah, I made him a file clerk in reference to Harvey Pekar. To make it very more meta, because when he stops being a superhero, he goes to being a file clerk, like in the real world. So I think it influenced it a little more in that things started getting a little more realistic because of that, and maybe people started looking at the mundane a little bit more in superhero comics. That's just the thought, though.
Yeah, no, he was also a big influence on Warren Ellis's writing, you know, for the non-superhero action scenes. Warren Ellis always talked about.
In general, I feel like he opened up so many like graphic novel memoir.
Yeah, well, of course, with obviously the autobiographical.
He really drove the whole movement in
the whole movement, yeah.
Essentially, to where autobiography seemed to become the main kind of genre.
Well, I also maintain and declare that he was, and I also know for a fact that he was a big influence also on Seinfeld and Curb Your Enthusiasm. I know, like Larry, both Larry David and Larry Charles have said that like they've read him, and because before. Pekar was doing comics about being behind an old Jewish lady at the supermarket, and the same thing, you know, Seinfeld at the in a Chinese restaurant, the whole episode and things like that. So I think that Pekar influenced a lot of writers who then influenced culture.
Yeah, in Seinfeld, originally instead of a Superman magnet on the fridge, it was a Harvey Pekar magnet. You're saying.
And the executive, the NBC just said
they just put the squash on that. Yeah. Like, who's that old man?
Old man. It doesn't work.
Take that off.
All right, cool. Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to bring you some free comics.
Yay.
Nice. Be proud of your question.
You did it. Let's get the next question.
What music do you write to?
Anyone?
I'll take that one.
Great.
That depends on the thing I'm writing. A lot of the time I write to jazz music, which I think really helps because it's kind of ambient, but it kind of fuels the flow as well. And when I need to write something quickly, I listen to heavy metal.
I can only write to Brian Eno's ambient music because even if it's because it's sort of like a cushion. Because I can't, if I'm writing to anything with words or even other jazz, I get too into it. And Brian Eno stuff is just like, it's sort of like a little tickle underneath me.
It's a tickle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a little when you make that gesture, it's very indicative.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're tucked in anyway, so it's different.
Yeah, I can't write with a lot of music on because I will listen to the music and not write. But if I do put some music on, it's going to be piano. And if there's a pianist I love, it's jazz and Andrew Hill. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
Andrew Hill, sure.
He's that's a pianist.
I only write to a live barbershop quartet. It's expensive.
Live, in your house.
Yeah, it's expensive, but they're good guys.
It's worth it.
And they don't have a lot of other work.
Your writing's a little shitty.
To be fair, the music's shitty. Like, I can't...
Yeah, every single time I read something...
Do they give you a trim also?
they charge me for it.
Yeah, you keep handing me those sketches about giving your love a cherry.
Yeah, I know.
Wow.
What name that barbershop quartet song? Yeah.
I don't know.
I gave my love a cherry.
She
immediately broke up with me.
Raise your hand if you ask that. You're going to get some free comics.
Who else? All right.
And if there are any barbershop singers out there, I'm happy to start some of my own quartet or duet.
Well, you got
Hey. Hey. You?
Yeah.
The four of us?
Yeah.
No.
X-Men.
All right.
No.
So now we have X-Men First Class set in the 60s. What other comic movies would you like to see as period pieces? Good questions tonight.
Let me just say Caveman Punisher. Caveman Punisher. Just a bunch of rocks and felt.
Flintstones crossover.
Yeah.
That's great.
Amazing.
Yeah. That episode of the Flintstones when they're in the gang, they're gangsters, and they cross the wrong guy. He fucking kills Barney Rubble in a fucked up way. Cuts his dick off.
This guy lit. This guy Rubble.
What about you guys?
It's in the 60s. What would I say?
It could be
it is in the 60s.
Any comic book property in a different time period.
Yeah.
In a different time.
Doesn't have to be the 60s.
Something like old school Superman would be kind of cool.
How in the 50s?
Yeah, like real doughy Superman.
Yeah, and I think the same exact for Shazam. You know what I mean? Like a Shazam movie in like the early 40s. You know, like I think that would work.
I'd like to see Spider-Man set in the 19th century. I don't think they ever did that one. I know they did the 1600s, but I'd like to see like a whole Victorian era Spider-Man going on.
How about a Victorian Tron with just candles?
Yeah, that'd be...
I was going to say maybe we could see Spider-Man
in mirrors. Candles and mirrors.
Candles and mirrors.
There you go.
Because it would burn you.
Oh, my God.
Cool. Raise your hand if you ask that. Pete's going to bring you some free comics. Let's get the next question.
What do you think of Wonder Woman's new costume?
Ugh, haven't we talked about this for the last six months?
Man.
We haven't talked
about they're talking about the new costume.
No, I know.
If she's wearing any costume, it's a minus.
Cool.
The nude Wonder Woman series. I will say, the Wonder Woman pilot that never made it to series, a friend of mine saw it, said it was bad, but not as bad as you think.
For whoever asked that, are you talking about the new Wonder Woman costume, the one for the DC relaunch? Is that?
No, the one with the black pants and the jacket.
And that stupid jacket.
Oh, it's
stupid. Well, what's... Isn't she wearing pants in the new relaunch?
Yeah, she's wearing pants, but no jacket.
Good.
Oh,
no,
yeah.
Guys, we're too far in.
Is she wearing underpants?
Yeah. That's the creepiest thing that's ever been said on this show. That's the creepiest thing.
I said it so quietly.
Jeff just whispered to Alex, is she wearing underpants?
It's a costume. I'm worrying about the design.
Yeah.
Ergonomics.
Ergonomics.
Whenever they've drawn her, there's...
Underwear or no underwear?
Yeah. When they've drawn her, there's visible panty lines.
Yeah. That's a major part
but her,
of Wonder Woman.
Her plane is invisible, but her panty lines are visible. Is that what you're saying?
I don't want to talk about
that. No, when she's in the plane, her underwear turns invisible.
This is going to win
this,
a lot of fans.
This is the problem.
That was a thong.
This is the problem with what we're talking about with Wonder Woman.
What? Exactly. There's no perfect costume.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares about the story? What's she wearing?
Yeah. I just want to see her trying a different outfit.
Guys up there,
what's your take on the Wonder Woman?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
I only care about one thing.
What's that?
The Twilight graphic novel.
I want to know.
Question. Finally.
Hold on. Are they wearing underwear? In the Twilight graphic novel, are they wearing underwear?
How embarrassing. Yes.
All tidy white.
You thought about it and you knew the answer.
I would hope so.
Wow.
Not interested. Thanks.
Come on, Stephanie Meyer.
Raise your hand if you asked that. Free comics. Next question.
Yeah. All right. Double point.
All right. So for the rest of the questions, we're going to do a lightning round. First answer is always correct, mostly.
Is there any annoying new culture developing in indie comics now that they got mainstream movie-related buzz?
Yep.
Ooh.
Oh. I thought the first answer was correct answer.
Yeah, well, did you explain what that is? Did you
say it? Yes, it's a... All that needs to be said.
Do you know what you're answering yes to?
Okay. Yeah.
Repeat the question then.
Is movies making comics crappy? Yes, they are.
That's not
that
the question.
Annoying trends in indie comics.
I like that question better.
Yeah.
What's that?
Are movies making comics crappy? Yeah.
But are there annoying trends in indie comics?
Because of movies.
All indie comics were annoying to people.
I'll say yes, but I'd say because of the American Splendor movie, everyone and their mother is doing an autobiographical mini comic, which I'm getting kind of tired of.
That's true.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that is amazing.
Yeah, nailed it. Sorry, Pete.
You're right.
Next question.
What is the half-life of kryptonite?
You know, it's funny whoever asked this. I was at the, I work at a bar on Monday nights at Barton, and we were talking about the periodic table, and someone was like, Krypton? This is clearly fake. That's a comic book. I was like, no, it's real. but I don't know the half-life.
Yeah.
Anybody?
Well, there isn't. Yeah. Well, they have like the Krypton or Kryptonite.
Kryptonite.
The element's called Krypton. Right?
The element is Krypton. Yeah.
Yeah, so
Kryptonite is fake. Kryptonite is fake.
You know either answer?
Anybody would
challenge you. A million years.
I think the answer is however long the writer needs it to be.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's a real scientist. I mean.
No, but there's
but Krypton sort of has a higher number on the periodic
table,
so it's probably a much shorter half-life.
Yeah.
Than I was a chemist in college.
Boring.
Now you want me to name it? I'll name the noble gases if you'd like me to.
Helium. How do you become an indie?
Radon.
How do you become an indie comics artist today?
Guys,
you become an indie artist. You put your, you just be one. You put it online. It's like in therapy. Fake it to make it. Fake it to make it. Put it online as if you were getting paid the highest thing.
You just draw.
Yeah, just draw. Pop it online. You don't have to pay money to pop it online. You did it. And then if it's awesome, someone will pay you to be it.
There you go.
Comic book club.
Yeah. Packed with potatoes.
Definitely come to
comic book club. Yes.
You've launched 1,000 careers.
Done. You're automatically indie comics.
Matthew.
Didn't John Byrne start in this show?
Yep. Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Peter David, Chris Claremont.
Yeah, you pitched
Stan Lee.
You pitched Caveman Punisher.
Is there a new issue of Royal Flush coming out soon, Mr. Jeff?
It's annual, so it would be not too soon. It'll be probably next late spring, next early summer. It's cooking. That's an annual, big, chunky piece of art and comics and music.
Cool.
Cool. Last question.
Actually, I want a quick shout-out, Mazel Tov, to editor-in-chief, publisher Josh Bernstein, who's getting married on this coming Sunday.
You're all invited!
Yay! I actually set them up.
Oh.
Shidduck.
What?
No.
To what extent must art, to what extent must art in indie comics be quirky? Is there such a thing as drawing too good for them?
That's a cool question.
Calvin?
You would think that sometimes, but there are other artists who have done it, you know, like Mark Zingarelli.
Yeah.
There are others who really have really, you know, really representational art.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, indie comics are broader than you might think, but certainly eccentric drawing is kind of associated with it.
Sometimes they could be more realist than mainstream.
Yeah.
There's some new photorealistic ones. I can't blank it on the names, but Fumetti, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. And even
sort of matching the voice.
I mean, it's not wildly eccentric. It's kind of a very grounded kind of drawing style.
Strange Haven.
Yeah, exactly. No, but that's good as
all
answer.
Right, there you go. Question answered, and that's it for your audience question. Guys, I'm very excited about our next section, which we like to call the Week in Geek.
Yeah, we do. That's why we have some beats and books.
Yay. There's just a couple of big, big things that we need to talk about this week. We're going to kick it off talking about X-Men First Class that just came out this weekend. Have you guys seen X-Men First Class?
Yep.
I mean, I thought it was a great movie. I kind of wonder how the timeline works in that whole thing, because
yeah.
I think, like, yeah, how old will they be now? Are they going by the timeline? Are the movies set in 1999? That's a little confusing.
Was it a good movie?
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Well, and to that point, though, for all the characters that the ages sort of fucked up, they were like, well, my genes are aging me much slower.
It is true.
Which I was like, you can sort of see what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And there's some great bits in it. It was a good flick.
Yeah. What did you guys think?
I didn't hate it, but I definitely I waited until after the credits, and there was nothing.
Yeah.
You guys.
Here's the thing. You should have looked it up, because I looked it up before, and I was like, I'm getting the fuck out of here.
Yeah. Everybody was leaving, and I was like, where are you assholes going? You're going to miss it. And then I was the asshole.
So other than that, though, what did you think about
it? I mean, there's nothing after that. I mean, I became upset, and then I took it out on the movie.
So you retroactively hated the whole movie?
Yeah.
Because you waited around.
Fuck this whole movie.
Because you were tricked.
Yeah.
But at least you know, like, who the gaffer was.
Yeah, exactly.
That's nice.
A lot. It's crazy because Mystique had, like, 10 people who were on her makeup team. Wow. I thought that was interesting.
See, there you go. That's why you stand for the credits. That's
right.
Why you stand for the credits.
I did like the coin bit. I thought that was amazing.
That was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Kevin Bacon, I thought, was really good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Especially that first scene when he was playing the Nazi, when he was just a Nazi at that point. I was like, oh, man. So I think the New York Times review was like Kevin Bacon having a wicked time throughout. And that was so true. He looked like he was having so much fun.
I was disappointed in the second half of the movie, I have to say. I love the first half. Production design was amazing. It was exciting. It was propulsive the entire time. I loved Kevin Bacon as the villain. And then the second half, I felt like, was almost entirely taken over by winking at the audience and just filling in the gaps between X-Men First Class and the first X-Men movie.
So it was...
That was my problem with it.
It was trying to please continuity.
Yeah, I know this is kind of a personal thing, but I have a huge problem with that sort of thing. That sort of thing, so like in the Phantom Menace, where they stop the entire thing to be like, I want to present to you R2-D2. Right. And they just pause and like look at the audience for 5 solid minutes while we realize that it's R2-D2. I felt like it was the same thing.
To be fair, it took you 4 minutes to make the connection.
Yeah.
It sort of breaks the fictional illusion like they're doing something besides telling
the story.
There was
just nonstop filling in the gaps when I would have been perfectly happy, and I understand the regular audience member would not be perfectly happy with being like, this was just an adventure set in the 60s, ding. But, you know, they need that, but I did not need that. I found it distracting, personally.
Yeah, I agree with that a little bit. I feel like a lot of the complaints from comic book people were that, like, this is a mishmash of characters from all across the timeline of the X-Men comics. And it's like, well, come on, man. Like, once it's happening, just let it, like, don't be annoyed by that.
None of it's real. It's all different.
What? What?
That was a documentary film!
Come on!
A documentary film from the 1960s!
Loud noises!
It's a parallel Earth.
Who is this guy?
Not again. Don't worry.
I agree with you. Like, it's like, enjoy the movie. The Wolverine thing
was awesome.
That was great. That was cool. But you're right. They linger on that shot for like an extra minute.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't need to drink his drink and then order another one for me to get what was happening. Like, I know how he works.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a little much. But in general, I thought it was. It was good, especially
they
the way...
They trimmed that down. It was supposed to be like a whole thing where he lights up a cigar and then says, Bob,
yeah.
What are you, the best at what he does? And then he stares at the camera.
Yeah.
Great.
Not to get too serious, but since we were talking about racism already at the beginning of the show, did you guys feel the movie was like maybe a little bit racist?
Uh-oh. I thought this because Darwin died?
Okay, this is getting into
that
weird.
Was
weird.
That really
was, that was weird.
This is huge spoiler time, but okay, in the movie, there are two black characters and one Jewish character, right? Jewish character, of course, is Magneto. He's in a concentration camp. Ends up like god awfully evil by the end of the movie. I don't think that's too much of a spoiler.
Well, but I didn't find that anti.
That's not.
But coupled with the two black characters, one of whom dies halfway through the movie, and the other one who turns evil immediately after that. It sort of has this pattern of like making me kind of uncomfortable.
Well, I will say the Darwin death, I was like, that definitely took me out of the movie where it's all of them hanging out, and he's the only like. He's the only black character, essentially, at that point. I mean, I don't know about the Angel character. Like, doesn't she's not like, oh, that's a black person. You're just like, oh, like she's sort of mixed ethnicity. And then instantly, he's killed. I was like, no way they're going to do that. And then
and you know what the weird part is? Darwin's power is to survive.
Yeah. It's such a joke, though. It's such a joke.
I know. I was like, no way. You know that, like, terrible stereotype. Like, why would they make that happen?
They don't care.
I know, right? And that's what it seemed like. They were just like, sorry, this is the way it's written.
This is how we operate.
My agent told me, the manager told me to write
all right,
like that.
I haven't asked anybody about this, and I haven't done any checking. Who was the tornado guy?
Riptide.
Riptide?
That's what they
said. Seriously?
Is that his name? I thought it was...
Riptide from the Marauders, the guy who, like, turns into tornado?
Really?
Really? Oh, well, that was the other thing also. So he was ethnic, he was evil, and the red guy was evil. So everybody of color was dead or evil the entire movie.
Yeah. Well, have you seen that? It was the 60s.
On the same, have you seen that anti-circumcision comic?
I've heard about that.
I've heard about it. Yes.
Evil rabbi stealing the force.
Won't waste too much time on it, but there's basically an anti-circumcision with the blonde superhero in the dark room. The dark rabbi is going to snip all the wieners.
Tweet your wiener. I haven't read that comic. Who's publishing it?
Marvel. All right, I think we're going to move on, actually, and talk about the opposite of Marvel, which is DC, you guys. Obviously, there's been an insane amount of news coming out of DC the past couple of weeks. If you don't know what's going on, DC is relaunching their entire superhero line. Starting as of August 31st, they'll be releasing 52 entirely new titles that are either slightly tweaked or completely tweaked superheroes, various properties. They've been releasing nonstop. There's going to be a new Justice League by Geoff Johns and Jim Lee, and then a bunch of other stuff. So, first of all, in general, how do you guys think about this?
Big move. I don't know. I feel like a lot of the titles that DC publishes now that I like are the ones that are sort of going away. Like the Batgirl stuff, Supergirl. I really like, and that may not make it. Secret Six. Also, I don't really read that, but I know it's very good.
Love it.
So it's sort of like, oh, all the sort of interesting, quirky things are going away, and they're just like sort of steamrolling everything else.
Well, they did announce a couple of weirder things today. There's going to be a Frankenstein series. There's going to be Justice League Dark, which pairs up the magic characters in the DC universe, kind of like Shadow Pact.
Isn't that a little overt calling it dark, though? That's what I was thinking. When I saw that announced today, I was like, better name?
Yeah. I'm a bigger fan of Justice League Milk, anyway.
Yeah. It's racist a little bit.
Yeah. Just a little bit. What do you guys think about this? Thoughts about the relaunch and the news so far?
As a kind of superhero light reader at this point, I mean, I started out that way. I am not as big a superhero reader as I was years ago. I actually kind of psyched by it because I kind of feel like I can, like, get back into it again.
Yeah.
Even though I'm kind of in the business and I get the books, I'm a little bit I'm totally overwhelmed. And so I'm actually kind of excited. I think that it'll be, you know, maybe I'm the reader they're talking about. Because I feel like now I can catch up.
You better go and buy them all then.
Wait,
I don't have
and that's good, I think.
What about the female readership? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, is that
Are they launching the young female line or something?
Yeah.
Part of the DC thing? Like,
maybe. I don't think they've announced it yet.
What, yeah. Gotham Sirens? What?
I heard there was
that's not making it.
Well, one thing we can talk about, which actually made me a little heartbroken, at least when I first heard it, I don't know if you guys know about Batgirl. There's going to be a new Batgirl number one, which is written by Gail Simone, which is the good news. It's Barbara Gordon, who up until now, for the past 20 years or so, has been the character Oracle in the DC Universe, and is pretty much the only empowered, wheelchair-bound hero in comic books. Very unique character, really great, incredibly well-written a lot of the time, and they're taking her back to where she used to be, which was Batgirl. Batman's little sidekick. So I'm personally a little upset about that. I don't know how you guys feel about it.
Well, I think it's such a weird choice because, like, it's been so long. Like, who out there is still like, no, Barbara Gordon's the real Batgirl?
But why not another Batgirl and Oracles exist? Because that's like you said, like, she was a genuine, I have to say that she was one of the only actually genuinely new, new in quotes, because she's not new as Batgirl, but a new character in all extent
that
of purposes.
That is stuck.
And it seems very silly to take it right.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think it's right. I don't think it's a bad idea. They're doing it, but again, they're trying to bring new readers, so they're maybe trying to reset continuity, and the whole thing of having Oracle be shot by the Joker.
But then it wouldn't have to be Batgirl. It wouldn't have to be...
Right, but like, they have to go back in the backstory and explain, oh, how she's Oracle, so that maybe what their rationale.
Except there's so many things that they're not relaunching. Pretty much all of the Green Lantern stuff is staying totally the same.
Most everything else in Batman is
staying pretty much the same.
True.
She's the only thing that's really changing at all. So it's a bit of a bummer.
My overall vibe on it is I love reading convoluted continuity stuff, and I love reading reboots if they're written and drawn well. So it doesn't, like, so as long as there's great writing and great art, it doesn't.
Yeah.
My only problem with the reboots is it seems to be a lot of books written by J.T. Kroll.
Yes.
And that just kind of bothers me a little bit. Cause
it sounds like fighting words because this is a podcast.
Have you read The Rise of Arsenal?
Yeah, he's taken up a Green Arrow and one other one.
Yeah.
Teen Titans.
All right, guys, I think that's all the time we have in the Week in Geek. Hey, we're going to move on up to our next section, which is trivia, and for that, we're going to turn it over to Mr. Peter LePage.
Mr. Right. Peter LePage!
Thank you so much for showing up. We appreciate it. It's an opportunity to win $25 in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like a chance to win? Yay, guys! What's your name, sir?
Fawad Siddiqui.
Fawad, audience Fawad. Today's trivia is on the DC launch.
I came from Miami for this show.
Yeah! Awesome.
He earned it.
Maybe.
He's going to earn it in 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Okay.
I'm illustrating Caveman Punisher.
Nice!
Okay, so if you're paying attention...
Talk to me.
If you're paying attention to this album at all, you will know all these answers. Here we go. Okay, so, DC relaunch. How many issues will be starting at number one for DC?
52.
Is it A, 52?
Wow!
B, 51.
The answer.
Or C, the answer. Megapixels my ass. So A is correct. Question two. Which will be the first comic relaunch? Is it A, Superman, B, Justice League, or C, Grover Cleveland? So it's either A, Superman, or B, Justice League.
B, it wasn't actually there.
Yes, Justice League.
Genius!
One of the benefits to this relaunch is it A, comics will also be available online on Wednesdays for DC, or is it B, we won't have to worry about milestone issues like number 900? Or is it C, DC is not willing to try anything to sell comics? So it's either A, B, or C. We will accept.
The answer is A.
A, yes! Yeah.
As we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
Punisher Max. Yes.
Any particular reason?
Because Jason Aaron's doing an amazing job. That's why.
What is he doing?
Well, it's just a fun examination of the Punisher kind of stuck in prison, a little bit powerless, and, you know... It's kind of
He's lost his powers?
Yeah, he's lost all of his powers.
Oh, wow. So he's just a regular guy now.
Yeah,
He's just out of bullets.
He's just out of bullets, yeah.
Oh, okay.
He's one weakness. Yeah. His Achilles heel is running out of
bullets. Justin, what about you?
I actually picked up the last issue of Punisher Max, and it was very good. And it's not just him in prison. It's juxtaposing that and him returning from Vietnam and dealing with and coming back to his family.
It's very psychological stuff.
It's really good. There's a Mr. X hardcover coming out tomorrow.
That's what I was going to say.
Oh, really? If you've never heard of Mr. X, it's a great sort of noir-y, old-fashioned character.
And the Hernandez brothers worked on it back in the day.
Dean Motter.
Dean Motter, who's fantastic, who went on to do it. If you ever read Terminal City, another great comic. Mm-hmm. So
is that that movie with Tom Hanks?
Castaway.
Yeah.
No.
Sometimes I feel like I live in a terminal.
Hey!
It's a quote from the trailer. Come on, guys, it's a quote from the trailer.
Yeah, pick the biggest Tom Hanks movie, Terminal.
I'm most looking forward to, there's an Empowered special that's coming out tomorrow. 10 questions for the, did I take yours?
You
can say it too. But 10 questions for the Made Man is coming out. Empowered is amazing if you never read it. It started out because Adam Warren, the writer and artist, was sick and tired of drawing bondage commissions essentially, that's boiled down. And so he writes this character that has a super suit that the more it gets torn, the more she loses her powers, but it's actually empowering at the same time as it's ridiculously making fun of Cheesecake in comics. So this is a special focusing on Maid Man, who is basically Batman in a maid's uniform. And
he still gets to draw bondage.
Yeah, he does. So it's great. Great comic. Definitely pick it up if you never have. Jeff, what are you looking forward to?
I was also going to say the Mr. X. And instead, I'll just plug two things that I happened to buy this week that I love. Because they'll still be there because trade paperbacks are there and they're all those. Alejandro Jodorowsky's Screaming Planet, which I don't know if you guys know. It's short stories by the Jodorowsky did the ink call with Mobius, and I happen to think this is awesome. And Nick Bertozzi's Lewis and Clark, if you go to a comic store. It's history made entertaining and titillating.
Cool. Titillating. And plug some of your stuff. What should people check out?
Regarding things that are going, actually, if you haven't yet, you can go to smithmag.net/PCARProject because there's an archive of about 20 free, relatively new, within the past few years, Harvey PCAR stories written by a few different artists, and they're all online for you to read whenever you want to check out.
Cool. All right. Josh?
There's a lot of some good stuff here, but Scalped. I mean, that's one of the best stories. It's like The Sopranos meets Indians. And modern Indians, you know, the ones who drink a lot and, you know, all that good stuff. That is right.
And
actually, not so modern. They did that here, too.
And plug some of your stuff.
The big thing is Cleveland's coming out in Cleveland coming out in December, hopefully. So definitely go pick that up. It'll be amazing. And I have a comic. I don't know if you can find it, but it's The Schizophrenic. I wrote it, and we got it in stores. And if you can find it, I suggest it.
Drawn by Toby Cypress, a great artist.
It was pretty awesome, but didn't sell very well. So come on, try to buy it if you can find it.
Calvin, what are you looking forward to?
Empowered, of course. But just real quickly, there's a book coming out from Yip Press this week. Maybe on that list, but if it is, and it should be, A Bride Story, I believe it's called. It's by, I'm going to mangle her name, Kaoru Maori. Anyway, she's the woman that did Emma. And if you know manga, you know Emma. It's a fabulous book. But this new story, beautifully illustrated, really great. And Jim Ottaviani's biography of Richard Feynman, fabulous, the great nuclear physicist. And once again, I'm just a crazy manga fan, and I'm also a crazy baseball fan. If you haven't read Cross Game, it's charming, it's beautiful illustration, it captures the heart of baseball. It's just a great, great series.
So what is it about?
It's about two kids, as kids who grow up, how to say it quickly. Two kids, a girl, a guy, they both love baseball. The girl is a pitcher as well, but she dies early in the book. But it's not a depressing story. It's just a great thing, this great game action. And it's really a story about, you know, kids kind of overcoming adversity. But it's the beautiful illustrations, and like most manga, the story just sucks you.
And everyone should check out, I read today, and it was awesome, PW Comics World, Calvin's newsletter from Publishers Weekly every month. A new one came out today.
Yeah.
Great. How would we check it out?
Yeah. You can follow it on Twitter at PW Comics World. We chat about comics all the time. You can follow me at Cal Reed. I gab about comics constantly, among other things.
All right. Very cool. A couple of things before we go. You can check us out at youtube.com/comicbookclub. Next week on the show, we're going to have Mark Sable and Paul Azaceta, the team who are working on Graveyard of Empires from Image Comics, which is a zombie story set in Afghanistan. So it's kind of cool and controversial, you guys.
Really
get into it. Anything else you guys want to plug?
What's that?
Anything you want
to... check us out. Friend us on Facebook so you know all of our upcoming guests and shows.
Anything that you've written recently or something like that people might not know about or even relatively recently?
Nope. But thank you. But there's a couple of people we want to thank before we go. We want to thank Jeff for being on the show. Yeah. Josh. Woo. Charles. I'm kidding. Calvin. Ed Boothman. First of all, thank you guys. We're here every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Please tell your friends. Good night.
Thank you, folks. Everybody.